The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. 4 minutes past nine, Monday, the 20th of February, 2023. How are you keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. Was your weekend good? What did you get up to? Let us know. Keep us informed on everything going on in your life. Not quite. But let us know if there's anything you want us to talk about. How do you get in touch with us? Well, you WhatsApp or text 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Emails, if you wish, to comments at highlandradio.com. And you can get engaged with us on our social media and watch the show, in fact, as well. Go to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. That's on your tablet, your phone, your smart TV, your Fire Stick. The same with Facebook, Facebook Watch, or the app. Search at Highland Radio. Give us a like, a subscribe, and hit the bell too, because then you're reminded when we go live here on Highland Radio. And that's about it, isn't it? If you want to send us a letter, you can do that too. Highland Radio Mountaintop Letter Kenny will get us. Thanks to Donal, who sat in for me on Thursday and Friday. It's great to be back with you. Up here in Donegal, was down in Dublin explaining to everyone where we are and what we do and why we complain so much, and pointing out that we're not in Northern Ireland. So that was my 2 days in Dublin. Anything? Did I miss anything? Let me know. What did I miss? Because I miss listening as to what's going on up here. 086 60 25000. Right, let's have a look at the newspapers for this Monday morning. Is it just me, or is the year really flying in? 20th of February already. Like, we are just moments away from St. Patrick's Day, it seems. That's how it feels anyway. The Derry People, Donegal News. Milford could lose its district headquarters status under a new Garda restructuring strategy. Donegal's most senior officers have been informed that the county will be cut from four Garda districts, Buncrana, Letterkenny, Ballyshannon and Milford, to three. And while Angada Shiath Kana's top table is at pains to say little will change on the ground, local officers feel that downgrading Milford station will impact negatively on the availability and visibility of personnel in communities. Indeed, and you know, at the end of the day too, there's no communication. If they feel, you know, and we did have Drew Harris up here, and he knew what was going on when he was up here, I'm sure, although he says it was a local matter. What does it mean? Like, what's the impacts of it? How will policing change? It's not a secret, is it? Tell us if Milford is done away with, has been speculated now for some time. Well, what's replace it? How does it work? But there's not that level of explanation that I've heard anyway. The Derry News this morning, the Strathfoyle Greenway project on the outskirts of the city has received £109,000 from the British government's Levelling Up Fund. The fund's part of a total package of £1.3 million allocated to help councils across the north enhance green spaces in their communities. It'll fund 26 projects, which will see the planting of trees, the expansion of paths and trails, and the improvement of playing parks or play parks. On to the Irish Independent, and this headline really doesn't tell the full story. It seems positive on the face of it, and I'm not trying to be negative for the sake of it, but I'll explain as we go on. The first price cut in the cost of electricity can be revealed, a move that is set to pile pressure on the larger players in the market to reduce costs for households. Sounds good, doesn't it? Independent operator Pinergy has broken ranks to deliver a price reduction of 7.1% from the end of next month. You'd think our bills are going to come tumbling down, aren't they? Everyone's going to have to follow them. The problem is Pinergy is the most expensive in the market, and even after their 7.1% cut, they're still going to be way ahead of Electric Ireland, which has the majority of customers. Electric Ireland aren't going to look at and say, look, Pinergy have reduced their prices by 7.1%, but they're still more expensive than us. So hopefully we will, over the course of this year, sooner rather than later, see electricity prices come down. But it's not going to be because Pinergy, one of the most expensive in the market, has come back into the field. You know, this is like a horse that's running away with the Grand National and falls back into the field. It's not that it's, you know, setting any fine example, unless I'm reading it wrong. It comes at a time when wholesale gas and electricity prices have plunged back to levels last seen before Russia invaded Ukraine. Large players such as Electric Ireland, Bord Gáis Energy, SSE Electricity and Energia will find it difficult to argue that they're unable to reduce consumer prices. Well, they won't, because, as I say, they are still, most of them, cheaper than Pinergy. Households have been hit with brutal and persistent energy price rises in the past 2 years. Annual electricity costs for a typical home that we all have or live in, they've doubled to around €2,000. But please shop around. There's still, you can still go on to one of the switching sites, right? If you haven't switched for a while, and put in your details, and it'll tell you how much you can save. If you can't save anything, you've wasted 5 minutes on the internet. But if you've been with the same supplier for some time, please go onto one of those switcher sites and see if you can save some money, which will help pay for other things. The Irish Times this morning, coalition's cost of living measures may not exceed $1 billion. The government's scrambling to temper public expectation about the scale of cost of living measures being announced tomorrow. Ministers have said the package on offer will be significantly less than the measures announced in the budget, and the Irish Times understands that it may not reach $1 billion. There is to be a focus on targeted support, particularly for social welfare recipients, and the prospect of a new €200 electricity credit for all households is seen as very unlikely. While sources stress that the package of measures has not yet been decided upon, the indications are that at least one universal measure, the lower VAT rate for electricity and gas, will be kept for some time. Now, listen, I am not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not saying there's anything going on, right? But it is kind of coincidental that the day before the government is about to announce cost of living measures, right? We have a front page page which states that electricity prices are coming down, okay? And it also really doesn't point out the fact that they're only coming down above what the cheapest are already. As I say, it's a convenient story for the government because they will say tomorrow, well, listen, we're not going to introduce a €200 electricity credit because we are starting to see the markets react to lower wholesale prices. Now, it's a wonderful coincidence. I'm not saying that it is anything other than that, but my word, that's the kind of front page you want when you're trying to temper the public's expectations as it relates to electricity credits, isn't it? I'd be delighted if it were me because it helps. It all helps. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And how many cars would you say are on the road with no insurance? Now, a lot of you out there, of course, the majority, are fully compliant with the rules of the road. You know, there's lots of people out there on learner's permits that need their cars to get to the work, but they can't get a test. And they're not taking the car. The car's sitting outside the house because they're abiding by the law. But many, 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 many people don't. 1 in 12 vehicles on the road last year had no insurance. I think that's a really high number, 1 in 12. So if you think you're going down a really busy road, you look around, you count 12 cars, one of them's not insured. Well, the number of uninsured private vehicles on Irish roads grew for the third year in a row, new research reveals. Last year, the total number of private vehicles driving without insurance reached 187,803. This was an increase of 13,500 over the 2021 figure, the Motor Insurers Bureau of Ireland has found. The data shows that uninsured vehicles accounted for 8.3% of the entire fleet of private vehicles on Irish roads. This means that one in every 12 vehicles was breaking the law and driving without insurance last year. Since 2020, there are now more than 32,000 additional uninsured vehicles on Irish roads. So, perhaps no surprise, but still, I think, you know, 8%, 1 in 12, it's not insignificant, is it? The Irish Daily Star reports, as do all the papers today, because there was a great deal of interest in the case of missing mum Nicola Bully. You know, thousands of people go missing, sadly, across the UK, Britain and Ireland every year. But this is one of those stories that seemed to gather an awful lot of interest. But sadly, it seems that there is a discovery of a body is going to mean that it's going to be a very sad conclusion to this story for families and friends. A body was found yesterday in the hunt for missing mum Nicola Bully, less than a mile from where she vanished. Officers in two police cars raced to the scene, where the man and a woman who had been walking in the area pointed to the spot on the River Wine. Now, there is a... In terms of body recovery from the water, after a passage of time, a body can become more visible than it were in the interim. And I think that might have been what happened here. And those who were involved in the professional side of this would have been expecting it to take a while before Miss Bully's body was found. Well, cops received the call at 11:36 and Lancashire Police sealed off Rawcliffe Road in St. Michael's on Wire. The man told the first response officer it was a body of a woman. It hasn't been formally identified, but the expectation is that it'll be a sad news. And the family, I understand, are preparing themselves for that. On to the Irish Sun now. Westboro Chief Burke is wrong. The head of the notorious Westboro Baptist Church says sacked teacher Enoch Burke went too far in his war on pronouns. Fred Phelps Jr., 69, is the pastor of the U.S. church in Topeka, Kansas. The church has previously been the subject of several documentaries, one which branded it the most hated family in America. But the hate demo chief, as is described, and his members frequently picket rallies of LGBTQ members' sides with the Irish courts over Burke, which will be interesting to see if Mr. Burke, who still persists, he had a week off because of midterm. It'll be interesting to see if he, even when he's getting criticisms from those he may respect, to see if he still continues with that protest of his. Finally, and it's not least in this case, it's a very serious story because more than 1,000 people, the vast majority of them women, attended a sexual assault treatment unit last year. This was a jump of 200 cases compared to 2021. The figures were obtained by AIM2 leader and Meath TD Pádraig Tobin. Tobin, he told The Dáil, the truth of the matter is this is only the tip of the iceberg of what is happening. A fifth of those who presented were children. Junior Minister, Justice Minister James Brown claimed the government now has a zero-tolerance strategy in tackling all forms of sexual violence and will be doing more to help victims, including stronger laws to punish perpetrators. OK, and it's not in the papers today, but I thought it interesting to read, if I still have it here, to see what you think. Lots of you out there are avid readers. Roald Dahl is a very popular author, classic children's author, isn't he? But it's British publisher of the Roald Dahl classic books has removed a lot of language. They've been rewritten effectively from works such as Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Many of you read that growing up. Matilda, also a very, very popular book. And the idea is to make them more acceptable to modern readers. Now, this doesn't mean that old books with the old language are going to be burned at the stake either, by the way. So just to be clear on that, but I presume it's a new run with language that is more acceptable to some. A review of new editions of Dahl's books, now available in bookstores, show that some passages relating to weight, mental health, gender and race were altered. And I want to know, what do you think of this? Augustus Gloop, that's Charlie's gluttonous antagonist in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It was originally published in 1964, and it's no longer, he's no longer described as enormously fat. He's just described as enormous. Do you think that's good? Do you think young people growing up now need the word fat removed from their books? In the new edition of Witches, a supernatural female posing as an ordinary woman may be working as a top scientist or running a business. Now, previously, she was a cashier in a supermarket or typed letters for a businessman. So instead of it being worked, I don't see anything wrong in working in a supermarket personally. Or typing letters for a businessman, a woman for that matter. But instead of that now, she's turned into a top scientist or running a business. The word black was removed from the description of the terrible tractors in the 1970s, The Fabulous Mr. Fox. The machines are now simply murderous, brutal-looking monsters rather than murderous with the word black included. And that's just some of it. So what do you think? Do you think this is, you know, the world gone mad? Or do you think that, you know what, maybe if you've got a child and they're different, or they feel they're different for whatever reason, whether they are or not, I don't know, you know, or if they feel they stand out from other people is what I'm trying to say, right? Because we're all different. Maybe they have a disability, or maybe they are carrying some weight, or maybe they are a person of colour. And maybe reading these books, they might feel, you know, this is offensive, or maybe it might trigger their friends to call them names. I don't know. Or, so do you think it's a good thing or do you think it's a bad thing? What do you think? Now, Roald Dahl's house, publishing house, had to agree this, by the way. The both books will still sit in the shelf one beside the other, but there is this new watered-down version. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Good morning, Paul, Rosemary, Noreen watching. Good morning to all of you out there and your thousands listening. It's great to have you on board. Back with our first guests in a moment. Now, the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is expected to brief his cabinet this week on the state of play in negotiations between Britain and the EU on the Northern Ireland Protocol as speculation continues that a deal could be imminent. Former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, though, he's intervened on the issue, as you might expect. He's warning his successor not to drop legislation that would allow the UK to override the protocol. We're joined on the programme now by Senator Niall Blaney.
He's Fianna Fáil spokesperson on Northern Ireland and party lead on Good Friday Agreement Implementation Committee. Niall, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
It's great to have you with us. Right, so, I mean, we've heard a lot, of course. There was a series of meetings towards the end of last week, and the mood music really seems quite positive in this regard. What's your reading of it? Do you think a deal is around the corner, or should we not count our chickens yet?
Yeah, I think that Richie Sunak is doing his level best here, trying to get a deal over the line, but Boris coming into the equation hasn't and is not helping the opportunity of achieving a deal. And I think it's right that we don't underestimate the pressure that Boris and his ERG are applying on Richie Sunak. They've applied quite a bit of pressure on him over the weekend, quite significant. The Labour leader, Keir Starmer, has offered support in relation to a deal that the Labour Party come in and back him, and not Tory, but Boris and co. But they have countered and threatened his leadership. And that's quite a counter. And I suppose it's over the European Court of Justice. But maybe what's not been talked about is also the promise that was made by Boris and his colleagues in relation to the legacy or amnesty bill and the promise they've made to veterans in the UK that they'd be clear of any court hearings in relation to all those deaths and the ongoing investigations that took place during the Troubles and since.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I don't think it's clear-cut at the moment, Greg. I think the Prime Minister's under quite a bit of pressure. He wants to get this over the line. He's making an effort now to meet his cabinet and try and seek support for it, and I suppose assess it. So, yeah, it'll be interesting in a few days to see where it is. It's really a problem for the UK at the moment. I think we're near completion, but it's where the UK government are at and what support is on the ground for Mr. Sunak, and I suppose he'll assess that over the next day or two.
Yeah, and we'll big payoff here, obviously, would be to get a government back in situ in Northern Ireland. Now, the DUP have a series of measures of any deal before they'll re-enter government. Looking at what could be on offer, it's hard to see any of those deals, or all of the deals, or the red line, being met. So it is going to require really the DUP being able to sell this to their members. As you know, we got an 80% over the line, or 85% over the line. That they're not going to get everything they want. Do you think that they will be prepared to sort of, if they can sell it as a win, to accept it and to get back into government? Or the ERGs you mentioned, are they going to be exercising their influence and using the DUP as some sort of a battering rod for the British government? It's still complicated in that regard, I think.
Well, I suppose you're right in a way, because it's the ERG and some of the Tories that are pushing out the seven items that the DUP wanted. The DUP haven't come out and said it in the same terms as some of the Tories are suggesting. I think the DUP will get most of what they wanted if this bill, if this agreement gets over the line. And I think they can sell it to their people. Absolutely. You may see the protocol disappear from all this, and whatever agreement is reached, it'll all be put into the new agreement. I don't believe checks have to take place on the ports in Northern Ireland. They can take place in the UK, but those goods that are coming from the UK to Northern Ireland have to go on to the Republic. There's ways and means of working all these things out. The bit in relation to the European Court of Justice may be an issue. I can't see how we can do away with that. It's just not possible. And I have trade coming in from the EU freely. So that one's going to be an issue. But at the end of the day, if they have six out of seven, I think they'll be doing particularly well.
And no one's going to admit it, perhaps, and you can't have... You can't please all of the people all of the time. But if this has gotten over the line, Northern Ireland will have its government in place, and it will be in this very strong position of having, you know, unfettered access to the EU market and, you know, free movement between Britain and Northern Ireland. And I mean, it positions it in a really quite, you know, useful place in terms of, you know, potential development, investment and what have you. Like, you know, a year down the road, if they can get it over the line, get a government back in situ, this could be very good for the people of Northern Ireland. And hopefully then there's a bit of radiated good news for us here.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if you take since this all started, trade North and South and from Northern Ireland and the EU has just exploded. The people of Northern Ireland are starting to feel that effects. The economy is going really well, while the economy across the water is in recession. So what's happening in the moment is really good for the Northern Ireland economy. And then moreover, as you say, getting a government in place, starting to make Northern Ireland work again. There's awful turmoil in Northern Ireland at the moment. And it's really important that they, first of all, as you say, Stormont gets up and running. But then we get to work on the institutions, North and South, to make the all-island economy work, to get all elements of the Good Friday Agreement back on track. And maybe that you're then in a position to start talking about our future in this island, to make the all-island economy work in a more streamlined way, to maybe start looking at sharing this island and open there.
And it can't be forgotten that we are, you know, reaching the anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, and it's very easy to forget sometimes, or for some, or if you're not aware of a certain age, to where we are now compared to where we were, and it's down to, it's as a result of that. And I think it'd be quite fitting if there was some sort of pathway to, you know, sharing power in a form by way of government in the same year as we celebrate that important milestone of that important agreement.
Yeah, it's funny. I was at Bearda Éireann's first talk last Thursday night week in Dublin, and he shared with us that he was very optimistic that the next 3 weeks would be crucial in relation to Northern Ireland. Nobody's seen this coming, but he did. And I suppose the Good Friday Agreement, he played a very big role in relation to that. Moreover now, he is still very much involved. He was in Northern Ireland last week. And I think we need all arms in society pushing us in the right direction, being positive and getting the best outcome for the people on the ground in Northern Ireland and for the economy of this island.
I mean, obviously, it's just the nature of the way things work now. Since he was re-entered the party, we're hearing an awful lot from people, his detractors, people who maybe are anti-Fianna Fáil, anti-Bertie Ahern. They're very justified in their views. But from a party's perspective, broadly welcomed by Fianna Fáil members, perhaps recognising his contribution, perhaps feeling that, you know, if there were a price to pay, that price has been paid. And you know, I mean, what is the sense within the party more broadly with Bertie Ahern now back being a member of it again, Niall?
Well, I suppose, Greg, as the person that proposed the parliamentary party, it was never necessarily about Bertie Ahern, but what Bertie Ahern brings to the table, to the equation, he is so highly thought of among all political parties in Northern Ireland. He's held in such high regard. He still has his finger on the pulse. There's a number of foreign politicians across all parties in Northern Ireland that meet with him on a monthly basis. And they're constantly working behind the scenes to unravel any, I suppose, tensions that exist from time to time. And they do what they do to calm things down. If we get to the stage where we can have meaningful negotiations on sharing this island, he will be pivotal. And as from my perspective, and a representative in Donegal, the one thing that has, I suppose, held us back as a county has been the border. And I think there's real potential for the island to move on, to start sharing the island, to become as one, and start a bit of understanding. Go back to, as you mentioned, the Good Friday Agreement. I suppose the one thing that was brought to the table during that was a bit of respect and openness, and relationships were built. It didn't matter what side of the equation you're on. If you're a unionist, nationalist, Catholic or Protestant, you came to the table and respected everybody around the table. And in that manner, that's where politics works best.
All right, listen, thank you very much for your time this morning. We do appreciate your insight on these matters as well. Take care of yourself. That is Senator Niall Blaney. As I say, you know, he having his say on Bertie Ahern re-entering the party, and it's kind of a counter to a lot of you know, messages and views that we've heard on this programme as well, who are completely against it, and for all the reasons that's been outlined. But as I say, everyone's entitled to their view on it, whether it's right or wrong in your view, and that Senator Blaney's there. Right, I just want to let you know that Monday Focus, it's a regular feature here on the show. We don't really plug it as much as we do, we just say it. But anyway, what happens is, and there's a couple of them, on Wellness Wednesday, by the way, after 11 o'clock, we focus on a particular element of mental or physical well-being, and we afforded a bit more time to sort of dig into it and get more information out there. And then on Monday Focus, we do the same with issues right across the board. And the issue on Monday Focus this week is on planning, making and executing wills. Now, I know that through our brilliant work with Seamus Gunn, a lot of questions come in on wills, and there's a lot of other questions too, and it's hard to get the balance right. So it's no harm maybe to pull out for this week, pull out wills and focus on those. So Gillian McGough, Associate Solicitor at McElhenney's and Associate Stranola, will be joining us, and she'll discuss estate planning and probate, the different levels of service, enduring power of attorney, importance of estate planning for same-sex couples and cohabitees, families with special needs or disabled children, and probate. So if you have any questions about wills, more specifically about putting a will in place, I think. But listen, I don't want to sort of say don't ask a question or that. But I think, you know, and I think particularly, you know, if you have a child with special needs, you know, what way does that work? Or what, you know, what should you do? And also estate planning and probate is a word. Like, what is probate? Like, I understand it now, I think, because a lot of the work we do in this program. But for some out there, you know, you might be planning to make a will, but maybe the terminology puts you off. I don't know. But we have Gillian joining us. So if you have any questions, get them into us nice and early if you don't mind. And that will be coming up after 11 as part of Monday Focus. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. Or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. When will the science books be rewritten to include the multiple genders out there? When will the Bible be rewritten to accept the gay community? Well, when... I mean, there is already talk of in one particular church changing God from a man to a person. So maybe that's already started. In terms of science agreeing, I think actually the science books might be the last place where you might find changes as it relates to multiple genders, because science, I don't think, has fully agreed on it yet, certain sections. Let's see. Hi, Greg. In relation to the protest on Saturday, refugees welcome. There was ones going around looking for people to sign up to take in refugees to their homes. The big crowd that was there never got one person to sign up. Says a lot about the ones in the protest. Again, listen, I personally haven't been judgmental or critical of any protests that are out there. I see an awful lot of sections of the media out there trying to disprove how many people got involved, or calling them NGOs being paid to... I don't know. Listen, it's just people going out in the street, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what the motivation of any crew is. They went out in big numbers. I'm not quite sure it's the 50,000 some were saying, but certainly big numbers. Because we had, when we were down in Dublin for the micro-protest, it was a massive crowd. Seemed bigger than at the weekend. And I think it was estimated well less than 50. But anyway, there's always this thingy measuring when it comes to the size of crowds. A lot of people turned out to say, you know, that Ireland for all. Where is the regulator with regards to the cost of electricity? I'm not sure how much you can regulate private companies, to be honest with you. Last one before break. Hi, Greg. As long as people are suffering, and they are all around us at the minute with the current cost of living, etc., no insurance and unable to pay bills will become the norm. People are faced with impossible positions, feed, food, clothes, the kids, etc. It's a complete mess, and the public need to realise that. And also, too, you see as well, there's, you know, if you're engaged with your electricity provider, you're not getting cut off at the moment. But people are finding, and people will be building up really big bills that will build up really, really quite quickly, a couple of grand over a year. That money eventually will have to be all paid back. So to some extent, even though we're doing certain things to stop people having power cut from their houses or whatever, they are facing the worry then of even bigger bills to follow. It's really, really tough out there. There's just absolutely no doubt about it. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Now, I hope I can say good morning to Brian Reid, Senior Executive Engineer with the National Roads Design Office. Are you there, Brian?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Great to have you with us. Right, okay. Now, you're inviting the public to have their say on the Barnesmore Gap Greenway. So what is being proposed here?
Yeah, so Greg, I suppose it's a very exciting project. Basically, it involves proposals to provide a greenway between the towns of Donegal Town and Balbafay, Stranorler. So I suppose it involves providing a safe and attractive corridor, which is it's mostly for recreational use by cyclists, pedestrians, and anybody with reduced mobility. So quite an exciting project for us.
Yeah, and in terms of the public input into this, what is the public's role? I mean, obviously, it's always good to consult with the public. Public can let them have their say. But in terms of what form this could take, what might we have influence on?
Yeah, so really important role, Greg, there. So I suppose with the project, we're very much at the initial stages of it. So we're just identifying a study area for the project and any of the constraints and opportunities within that. So the point at the minute, we're having our first public consultation. So we're very much just introducing the public to the project and then getting their feedback on any constraints or issues or potential problems within the area or other opportunities or benefits for the project as well. And that will feed into the project then and help inform the development of it going forward. So very much trying to get the public's opinion on it, on what we should do, and feed that into the process then. So a very important part of the process.
Yeah, indeed. And the whole process is important. We are at the beginning of it, though, the early stages of it, aren't we?
Yeah, very, very start of it, Greg, pretty much. So we don't have any routes or options decided at the minute. It's very much just a big circle on a map between Donegal Town and Balbafay, Stranorler. And then we'll look at everything within that, get all our feedback. And then as we go into the next stages, then start defining it down and picking routes and that next. So, yeah, very, very start of the development.
Yeah, and I mean, even in terms of the practicalities of it, I mean, the obvious thing here is that, you know, you follow the rail track, maybe it's not as obvious, but that's pretty perilous, you know, to make that safe and to make that protected from people falling from a great height, which might not be realized from the road. You know, even what might seem obvious might not be doable, or it could be incredibly, incredibly expensive.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I know there's that kind of assumption for greenways in general that they follow the railway route, but it's definitely not the case. We have to look at all possible options. It is an option that we'll have to look at, but definitely not decided that that's the way it'll go. We'll have to look at all potential options in the area there and what suits best and what's most practical. So that's what we do. So definitely not a case of a decided route on the railway line. We'll have to look at every other alternative option as well as that.
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, land acquisition, all that kind of stuff, does that form part of this process? And I presume it also can determine a route if and when we get to that point. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done here. I'm just trying to manage people's expectations in case they think they're going to walk from Balibafay to Donegal Town along a greenway, you know, this time next year. We're a long way off.
Yeah, no, definitely, Greg. There is a lot of work to do on it and to develop it. I suppose similar to developing a road project, there's a number of steps and approvals that you need to go through to develop the project, including, I suppose, the planning process and if there's any land requirement. I suppose on the land that you mentioned, it all depends on the route we take and what the effects on land. We obviously try and minimise the impacts where we can. Being a greenway, there's a code of practice for developing greenway projects, and there is an onus there in trying to stick to state-owned or controlled land where we can. So we will try and do that. Obviously, it's not always feasible or practical to do that, so there may be some requirement to acquire lands. We will try and minimise that, of course, but there may be a need. So there is obviously a process to go through with that.
Yeah, and then you have to presume, you have to accommodate presumably, you know, cyclists, you know, and walkers. There has to be as much as is possible accessibility for all. All of these boxes have to be ticked, I presume. So if I go into the Abbey Hotel on the Diamond in Donegal Town on Wednesday between midday and 8 p.m. and also Jackson's Hotel Bala Buffet on Thursday between the same times, midday and 8 p.m., what will I be met with? Now, people aren't expected to go there for 8 hours. This is open for people to dip in and out. I don't think, I wouldn't even wish that on you, Brian. But this is for people to dip in and out over the course of the day at times that might suit them. So you go in, what is the process? You know, if I walk in there, what have I got access to? How do I contribute?
Yeah, so we'll be there for the 8 hours anyway, Greg. But the project team will all be there to greet anybody that comes in. There'll be a series of boards with information there where people can come and read up on the scheme. There'll be a series of drawings there. As I said, there's very little detail in the information, as in no routes or anything like that selected. It's very much just the general area that we're looking at and what we're trying to achieve with the project. And then it's very much just getting people's opinion. So there'll be somebody there to talk to, if anybody has any feedback on the project, that they can talk to the team and relay that. Or there's also feedback forms there that can be filled out, where we can take down any of the information and feed that into the process as well. So as well as that, we have the 2 days, Greg, in Wednesday in the Abbey and in Donegal Town, Thursday in Jackson's Bala Buffet. We also have a dedicated project website there as well. So it's barnesmoregapgreenway.ie, where all the information that we'll have on Wednesday and Thursday will be on the website. Also, if people can't make it, that they can go on the website and have a look at it there and submit feedback online to us as well. So there's that option too.
And finally, this is not an official answer I'm looking from you, Brian, just more a bit of guidance, because there's been a bit of conversation over the last while about railways and whether Derry could be linked to Letterkenny. And of course, then people say, well, Letterkenny linked to Sligo and all that kind of stuff. So in planning a project like this that is sort of maybe medium term, even perhaps long term, would that have to be factored in terms of route selection, that to say, right, well, we have to, whatever we're planning here, we also have to have some level of consultation or consideration for maybe it could be in the way of any future plans to provide a rail link? Does that level of thought have to go into something like this? And if it does, in what way?
Yeah, I suppose it all forms part of the process, Greg. I suppose I can't really comment on whether or not there'll be a rail provided in the county. But as part of the process for the project, we do have to consult with all the relevant bodies, rail being one of those, of course. So we'll consultant with all those bodies to I suppose, make sure we're abreast of any plans or anything like that as we develop that we need to be aware of, so that we're not affecting anything else or anything else isn't affecting us negatively. So it does form part of the process there to inform.
Right, that'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to hear what they say, if you want to let me know. Okay. Listen, Brian, thanks very much.
Different conversation, Greg.
I know. But listen, I just was interested just to get an insight in how the process works. All right, take care of yourself. I'll remind listeners when and where, but thanks for your time this morning, Brian.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
I encourage anybody that has an interest in the project just to come along and have a chat to us if they can. It'd be great to get as much feedback as we can.
For sure, agreed. Okay, 2 in-person public consultation events taking place in the Abbey in Donegal Town, Jackson's Bala Buffet. The Abbey, Wednesday between noon and 8 p.m. Drop in any time between those hours. Jackson's, Thursday between noon and 8 p.m. And you'll have members of the project team available to discuss any queries or concerns regarding the project. Hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. I think it would be a great feather in the bow. And when you talk of other greenways, you know, it's not that big a distance between, say, for instance, Bala Buffet and Letterkenny. And then Letterkenny is going to be linked, isn't it? Hopefully via a greenway to Burton Port. You know, you can start to see, you know, quite a nice little network if we got it right. I'm not sure I'll get to see it all, but anyway, we have to plan for the future too, don't we? All right, thanks, Brian Reid, Senior Executive Engineer with the National Roads Design Office. Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly is Mayor of the Letterkenny Municipal... I'll start that again. He's Mayor of the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District. Good morning to you, Donald. Thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners there as well this morning.
Right, okay. Now, you are relating concerns from the public as it relates to GP services at the healthcare centre in Church Hill. What's going on there as far as we can determine?
Yeah, listen, Greg, you know, it was brought to my attention just as recent as last week there by local residents. Church Hill and surrounding areas had been phoning me with major concerns. There has been no GP in Church Hill Health Centre now for the past 18 months. You know, and, you know, this is, it's very alarming for Church Hill Village and the surrounding areas as well, because like we all know that this is a vital service, you know, and you know, especially in this area. In this area, you know, can't lose this service, and it's something that I'm eager, Greg, to lobby on to ensure that this service remains in Church Hill, because, you know, this service has been in Church Hill for decades, you know, as long as I can remember, and way, way back, long before that. And, you know, local residents have contacted me, and they're very concerned about this. And, you know, as we know too, Greg, you know, and I suppose in recent years especially, a lot of villages, especially throughout rural Ireland, have lost a lot of very important and vital services. And, you know, Church Hill is one of them. You know, a number of years ago, they lost their Garda station there. Only in recent years, then they lost the post office, you know. And it's looking now like they're losing their GP service, you know, where it's at risk anyway. And
Yeah, looking at the timelines here, is this an example of a service that was adjusted because of the pandemic, but has now become the norm?
Yeah, it seems that way, Greg. But listen, you know, we're all fully aware of the pandemic and the safety measures that had to be taken at the time. And listen, before the pandemic, there was a GP visit at this service three days in a week, for decades, like as I say. And I've been made aware that since the pandemic eased, a GP did return on a one-day-a-week basis. But this last 18 months now, there has been no GP at all, you know. And, like, that's something that, that I'm eager to look into and get to the bottom of. And, you know, I have contacted our minister, Stephen Donnelly. I've contacted our minister, Mary Butler, as well. Our minister, Charlie McConnell-Logan. And also our senator, Robbie Geller, who's originally from the Trent area there, very close proximity to Church Hill. Just to apply pressure on our minister as well to see what is actually going on here.
Just help me understand here. Would the residents of this area not be the members of a GP practice, and that practice had a satellite in Church Hill? Or do we have the population of Church Hill now without a GP at all, or trying to get on the list of a GP further away? I don't understand the makeup in that regard, because no. I know, say, for instance, down in Dunkineely, they lost their GP, but they were actually, a lot of them, you know, they were referred to and were members of the GP's practice in Glenties, for as an example.
Yeah, no, listen, Greg, that's not the case. But to be honest, the GP service in Church Hill was always ran, which is now known as the ACT Medical Centre. And, you know, there's a doctor that came out from there on a three-day-a-week basis. And, you know, like, the residents there now, I mean, like every area, Greg, there's elderly within the area, and, you know, one thing and another. And they're finding it hard at the minute, actually, to get an appointment in the ACT Medical Centre. They're also finding it hard to have their calls answered. And, you know, this is not the only place that I have got calls about this year that's struggling to get appointments. What's their GPs now within Letterkenny and the ACT Medical Centre and that? But, I mean, these people now, Greg, is expected, when they do get an appointment, to travel to Letterkenny. And listen, it's not that far away, don't get me wrong, but it's a long distance for some people, you know, that are used to having that vital service in Church Hill. And I want to add as well, Greg, that I have also contacted the ACT Medical Centre as well to get a response on this. But to date, and to be honest, I can't get them to answer my own call. And, you know, this is simply not good enough either. You know, these services need to be answering the phone. You know, they're expected, when you rang there, actually when I rang this morning as well, it puts you through, you know, any info to email. I mean, there's some age categories of people, Greg, and, you know, they don't know how to send emails, and they're not computer-wise, you know, and, you know, that goes for different age groups as well, you know, and it's something that we need to get rectified, and I'm eager to ensure this vital service stays in the village of Churchill for all the local residents in the surrounding area as well.
All right, okay. Well, we're making our inquiries, as you'd imagine, and we'll see what comes of it, what official response we get in that regard. Okay, thank you very much for your time this morning. That is Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly there. So we were covering the reports of the latest edition of Roald Dahl's children's books being edited to remove language which could be classified as offensive. Let's see what you think out there. Crazy world. I think I would prefer to be called fat rather than enormous. Well, enormously fat was the actual quote, but I get you. Another, the world's gone mad. Another, the world is away mad. Eventually we don't won't know what to say or even be afraid to speak. It's never ending. Another listener. The dictionary is the next book to be written or rewritten. The words fun, laugh, boy, girl, he, she, woman, man, fisherman, fireman, etc. will all be removed as they may offend someone. That really is crazy. Appeasing the weaker generation, says another. Honestly, every day there's something new now being removed or changed. What has happened to people? It's very sad times we're living in when words or names upset people so much. And last for now, I heard this. Can't believe it. What are they doing to the children? Someone needs to take a stand on this before it is too late. Now, this is not to be... I mean, people will obviously say, well, yeah, it's the same as what's happening in terms of genders and what have you. This is separate. This is words right across the board that people, some people might find offensive. It's just sometimes they make decisions. And I didn't hear the outcry saying, well, this needs to happen, that needs to change. And sometimes you feel that they're who's making these decisions? And I think it's going to be counterintuitive to any particular movements out there sometimes. All right, we'll talk more about that and so much more besides, including all your questions answered about wills. That's all coming up after the news and obituary notices. Stay where you are.